Chuck O'Shelley.
Oh, and it is the first day of September, according to that thing we call a calendar, allegedly. And this is the O'Shelley Effect, brought to you live on the website called O'Shelley.com. Look, I'm going to stumble over a couple of things because I almost meant to go into a different direction at the beginning of the show. Why? I'm about to have a rather uncommon conversation with the guy that we all know as the Greek. Anyway, let's get right to it. Greek, you know, I did say that it is, and I do say at the beginning of every show, by the way, I have for quite some time said that it is this date, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. Right. And there's a reason for that. And well, what day is it actually, Greg, by your observation?
Well, you know, but just by asking that, it seems like everyone's ignoring the whales, the bees, the flowers, the roaches, the fish, the sky, the moon, the sun, right? Everyone seems to be ignoring, well, what are they on? You ever try to talk to a daffodil? Hey, baby, is it really September 1st? Does a daffodil come back and say anything? Anyway, it doesn't have to. It's like,
I was once, dummy. I was once high enough to think a roach was telling me some things, but that is, you know, from an earlier part of my life. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
High enough, man. You know, when I look for those, I look high and low, but obviously I don't look low enough. But anyway, no, I'd say lawfully, meaning, you know, you can measure it. You could figure out that the sun rules the day, the moon rules the month. It appears to be the sixth month and around the 28th day till noon. So around noontime tomorrow, wherever you are, and all the people down under, what do they call that part of the world, Micro-Asia or no, Antarctica or something like that, that whole area there, they're not in front of us. That's totally erroneous. That's because of the Greenwich Zulu time. They're actually behind because you know how we know? They're actually behind, let's say, us, meaning in America here, or Europe. Okay. You know how we know? Guess what? We know it lawfully. How do we know it lawfully? By taking measurements. You know, well, like in a... Yeah, so they're actually behind. So, you know, then, yeah. And that could lead to a whole other interesting conversation or example that should be given to people when they're five or six. But if we discuss it now, we're going to lose the whole audience. What does that tell you? That's one condescending motherfucker. Anyway, what? Go ahead. You know,
well, that's one thing to consider. The other thing is, you know, there's measurable things that that tell us that indeed we're not on a flat Earth either. But you know, there's some people you can't tell that to, regardless of the fact that. Well, okay. Here is how I sorted that one out. I've had extensive discussions with snipers. And when you shoot from a distance of more than, and I forget exactly what it was, but let's call it a quarter mile. If you fire a projectile from more than a quarter mile, guess what you have to take into your calculations, Greg?
Yeah, the curvature of his ass. I mean, curvature of the earth, yeah.
Yeah, that, exactly. Yeah. And no, but that's the truth. Sure. Without that measurement, well, actually, you miss, or at least that's what I'm told.
Yeah, but
I'm
not an
experienced sniper, but go ahead.
But here's the thing. This is what I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of being called human. So I guess I go by the Greek or just I'm visiting here or whatever. Why? Because both sides are wrong. The Earth is neither flat and it's neither round. And there's a lot of aspects to that that will not be discussed. Just like why? Because the lawful aspects of things are not discussed. It's very simple. You know, if you want to prove it either way, you can, because even though something is round, let's say like an opal or a round or even a baguette cut diamond, it has facets on it. And if you were small enough standing on one of the facets, it would appear flat no matter what you did, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Earth has facets. I've witnessed both aspects of it. But I'm also privy to, and also have access to things that most people don't. So I'm not going to get into that because, again, if you miss the bus, you know, that's an old term. I think they use it all over the world, don't they? I guess if you miss the bus, it means there's usually another one coming around, you know. And maybe that's why we have these conversations. Anybody else who wants to engage me on this, but it is a very interesting thing to talk about things that are lawful. But you know, since we're on the time thing and they're calling it September, you know, since this is like the onus of the subject, maybe Septem means seven, doesn't it?
Last time I checked.
In Greek? Yeah, octo means eight, like octagon, octopussy, and all that.
Oh, yes.
And nova means nine. Decim correct? Means 10. So, I mean, so they're trying sort of, there is sort of a little bit of a lawful appearance of lawfulness, but it spins off. And, you know, the spinoff. Speaking of a spinoff, I want to know about the spinoff of all the disasters that should have occurred by now. Like, you know, society should have collapsed about 15 times in the past 4 years, right? You know, we all should have been dead by Fukushima radiation. Some old idiot going around telling everyone a few years ago we're going to die, you know, and now it's like, oh, well, you know, or young idiots, too. Although, remember the Geiger counters everybody was selling and all that? And also what's interesting, what happened? We're still fine, right? I mean, there's a measurable effect. And also what people don't discuss is just like the moon landings, what they call August is when the Americans dropped the two atmospheric atomics on Japan. Right now, how that the story behind that is also never discussed. There is a guy on alternative radio that spent most of his career as an alternative historian. This, I've checked out most of the stuff. It's pretty accurate. Opened my eyes to much, and I've looked into it even deeper. But most people, you know, like even Fukushima, you know, they think that when you say anything atomic or nuclear, oh, it's going to explode, you know. Well, you're not really actually creating one of those devices that most people are familiar with is a very, very, very complex thing. And they're not really explosions. They're called detonations. And all they do is actually reflect the dielectric field in the earth and short circuit. Oh, what did he just say? It's not like a chemical explosion at all, right? Right. It's not high speed chemistry. If you speak to anyone who works in mines and stuff where they use explosives, they don't like to use that EX word. They just say, what do you do for a living? Oh, I work with high-speed chemistry, because that's all it is, really. And also explosives are measured in speed, feet per second, right? Anyway, right. So, and I think when you get into ballistics, it's also referenced that way. So yeah, most people right. have been educated through the media or the eyes of whatever. I mean, you know, you do JFK research, so you see the absolute, whatever you want to call it, it is absolute idiocy that people consider to be the staple of their information base, right, through the, let's say, Kennedy assassination. And what has prevailed, for example, when you speak of nuclear atomics, are these several disasters which are reported inaccurately. And also, unfortunately or fortunately, the somewhat overt accuracy that cannot be escaped with atmospheric explosions, because I mean, how many people have seen the photos of the people, you know, the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all that, you know, the skin burned off. And everyone knows that when they did the atomic tests, you go on YouTube and you see all these atmospheric detonations, right? You see the flash. I'm going to get into technically, it's very different than a standard explosion, but anyway, it's really a double flash. You have the detonation and then the thermal stress. That's why there's something called the Vela satellite, and that's how they detect a nuclear detonation, is the double flash, a double event. We're all chemical explosions are a single event. But anyway,
right.
Everyone, they can't escape, they can't kind of sweep that under the rug, and the effects or the laws of physics are pretty evident with an atmospheric detonation. The light, the radiation, the heat, the shock wave. If anyone is within, let's say, from ground zero out, let's say, you could see the effects on biologicals and buildings and things like that, and, you know, and also people. But what's interesting is no one ever discusses the laws of physics or what happens when you have a deep underground nuclear explosion. It is almost unrecognizable. It's almost as if you could have three of them go off on TV in broad daylight. No one would recognize it. But I'll tell you what the effects of a deep underground nuclear explosion, the physics effects there are quite different. I'll go through just maybe two or three of them. You ready?
Okay, yeah, because you know what? We hear about these underground testing still being conducted today, right? North Korea does it, you know. But you're never shown anything.
Well, no, yeah, I was just going to say. I'll tell you what you will see overtly when they go off deep underground, especially if they're over the 100 kiloton range and they're almost about 700 feet underground, even if it's in granite or bedrock. Well, one of the first things you see is a tremendous, within a day or two, there is a large desire to be very nationalistic in the purchasing of a lot of American flags. The second thing you will notice is that a quasi-government security apparatus shows up at airports and demanding restriction of travel. And the third thing, of course, that happens in the laws of physics of deep underground nuclear explosions is, of course, the demonization of Islam. So I think the physics books need to be changed to show those characteristics of a deep underground. Anyway, I don't know if that was too funny, but maybe this is, you know, Chuck, I was at a bookstore. Yeah. I was at a bookstore the other day. I walk in and the lady says, you know, I've got all these 9/11 commission books. They're 50% off. And I looked at her and said, you know what? They're a lot more off than 50%. But anyway.
No, look, and works in a lot of different things. No, and I appreciate it. I really do. Gee, we got you in a rare mood tonight. You seem very energetic. This is really cool because I got a few things I want to put by you personally. And of course, the people that are in the chat room, we're always willing to entertain topics, questions, so long as they are reasonable and coherent. I'm certainly more than happy to bring them on in, and I have more than one person watching the chat room. So guess what? If you want to participate, go right ahead and drop it in there. The blind guy's a little slow, but I will get to it. All right. Now, interesting thing keeps coming up among people again and again, and it happens every what they call September anyway, which is generally in the same part of the year every year, although it does slide around a bit according to the lawful time.
All right, stop right there. Just hold the thought. Mm-hmm. On when it happened, I think I know where you're going. This was actually the 10th day of the 7th month. If anyone wants to look up what the 10th day of the 7th month is lawfully, according to certain observations, you're going to get a kick out of it. This year, it appears it's going to be on the 6th day of the 7th month. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, no, this actually has something to do with a completely I am absolutely at a loss to try and even begin to engage in discussion with people on this level, okay? And quite honestly, I'm having trouble having discussion with anybody anymore. When it comes to certain topics, all I hear is what you used to hear when you went anywhere near something called a medical office, which is, you know, the very, very loud quacking noises. That seems to be what I'm hearing from people a lot. But on top of it, they're not hearing a single thing I'm saying about anything, it seems like. Okay, that's my personal issue. Let's get back to being objective. What I observe mm-hmm. is a lot of people that think that, Planet X, Nibiru is coming. And in fact, there is a significant date. I'm not kidding you, by the way. I know this might seem laughable, but that there is significance tied to the date of September 23rd on the Pope's work schedule.
Again?
Yes. That was my point.
All right, now hold on. I can't get into the Nibiru because I posted on the Uncommon Radio site that I was going to be here tonight, and it was going to be the only dummy load free 2 hours on the internet. Now, if I go down that road, I can't promise that. But anyway,
look,
go ahead.
I spoke about it. It's my fault. You know, everybody can be angry with me. I just wanted to reference it because they believe again. And you notice how quickly he jumped on it. Why is it that every September, it seems like, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm wrong, but this is my attempt to observe this objectively. Every September, there's a doomsday scenario. And mm-hmm. then there are often doomsday scenarios which occur in, you know, December as well. The most famous one in recent years having been the Mayan calendar running out. That's the end of the world, et cetera, right? But what I'm saying is this is like the time of year for doomsday and, you know, the doomsday that never comes. And, you know, eventually, I guess one day somebody will be right if that's the time of year it happens.
Right. Stop you right there for a minute. We did something, Can You Keep Time? And I think several times I went over what the seasons represent. Spring is planting, summer is growth, fall is breaking down. All breaking down events happen in the fall. Winter is an interim period where there's exchange and travel, and people don't focus on what they normally focus on. That's why you have all the Merry Christmas, right? Happy New Year, right?
Right.
All that crap. Okay, so yeah, so whatever breaking down events you're going to have are going to be occurring starting from the next moon, probably. Usually it takes two moons to take effect and months, let's say, right? So that's very simple. All of your economic collapses, when did they happen? Since the 20s till the 80s, right? In the fall, didn't they? So mm-hmm. October, yep. September, what they call. All of your wars that lead to change, geographical political changes, start in the springtime.
Right.
Right. If you see a war starting in the fall, that is not a type of war that is going to change anything. Go do the history on that. Like certain invasions that happened in certain places, it didn't really have any effect. Or was it to extradite a leader, let's say, you know, hint, hint, right? I mean, there's so much going on in that aspect of it, of the geopolitical, that you could source it out using the seasonal effects of things. But Nibiru is not going to happen as the way here. You know, here's an interesting thing. I have like a, you know, the Swiss Army knife. deal. Right. It's real small. It's got a lot of functions. It doesn't do each one the best. But if someone says, you know, have you got a scissor? Yeah, I've got one. What do you take out? Swiss Army knife. Hey, you got a knife? Yeah, I got Swiss Army knife. Got a toothpick? Yeah, I got Swiss Army knife. You got a wine bottle? Yeah, I got Swiss Army. Here's your Swiss Army knife from now till the next 14 and a half years or so. You ready?
Okay.
This works easy, and it works well, and it works all, you know, most of the time, if not all the time, like a Swiss Army knife does, right? It's not the best, but it'll get the job done. There is going to be the rise of a Middle East Union, a very loose confederacy of nations in the Middle East working together, where your new world order, not the current new world order, but the new world order is going to be based, going to be run by young people, and it's going to be based out of the Middle East. And how are you going to have that? And by the way, when it forms, you're going to have world peace, economic growth, industrial growth, religious upheaval, all this, a new society, right? And it's going to be promised for 1,000 years. And all of the nations are going to support it. Now, how is that going to happen if Nibiru shows up on what they call September 23rd?
Well, number one, it's not. Number two, there's another aspect to that I think that needs to be recognized here. Simply because you're talking about something that sounds prophetic and sounds as though it is, you know, sort of old school, does not mean that there is not a very serious technocratic aspect to what you're talking about. You know, when people describe how is it possible that that's going to happen or this is going to happen, I think people need to recognize that as technologies evolve, certain things become reality that were previously thought to be fantasy. Okay, for instance, the ability to communicate on a worldwide scale. Okay, literally speaking, we could take a singular event and show it to every eye in the world if someone were so inclined.
That's the purpose of the internet, right? Not to sell your penis enlargement or somebody's butt. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, right. No, I'm just trying to put it in context here, and I don't want people to get carried away with the idea that this is some outdated prophetic idea. That you got to also understand that the things that you think are quite new are part of the plan as well. And there's got to be a technocratic aspect here to make probably one of these seemingly untenable things become reality. Wouldn't that play a part in this? And I think the technocracy, if you will, for lack of a better term, certainly is going to make that make a lot more sense, say, in the next 5 or 6 years. What do you think?
Yeah, and that word technocracy kind of rubs me a certain way. I think I've extended maybe some personal information about that, speaking to maybe a group that is leading that and how they are. Anyway, they are. But no, it's going to happen through that, unbeknownst to them. We're all actors on a stage, and the actor rarely writes the screenplay. But how is it going to happen? Well, there's certain laws that are put in place and certain cause and effects, just like very deep thermonuclear devices cause extreme nationalism, security apparatuses to limit travel, and Islamophobia, right? Same way, the same way. In other words, there are going to be many events that will be unbeknownst to people, you know, unrecognizable, that will, the cause will not be important, but the effect will. If you look at many of these quote-unquote false flags, it's not the cause that's important, the detail of what happened. It's the detail of what happens afterwards, right, you see? So this is why it's very important to know the future. And by the way, you know, I'm not part of that we, by the way, bite my tongue when I say that. The people have been brainwashed, instead of washing, they need to wash their brains of the brainwashing, but that to know the future, you have to be psychic or have a crystal ball, even, you know, these religious types, you know, Christians or whatever. I don't have a crystal ball. If you ever listen to some of these radio hosts that profess to be Christians, I don't have a crystal ball and know the future. I'm like,
yeah,
perfect.
They all say that.
You know,
yeah, perfect.
Yeah, it's like they don't, perfect, you know, you have to be ignorant to be part of that sect. But, and by the way, speaking of religious observances, if you look at all government religious exceptions and all that stuff, you know, they give for various reasons. You have to be part of a sect. If you say, well, I follow the scriptures and I want to be lawful to the what's proclaimed as the highest deity according to this book, they don't acknowledge that, you see. So again, I'm going to get into a little bit what's legal and what lawful and what's going on with that. But I don't want to derail the subject, which I think I just did for the first time on radio, if you want to bring me back to what we were talking about. But that's all right.
No, listen, I think it's actually working perfectly, and it makes perfect sense.
No, but the thing is, you have to know the future, that's what I was saying. Just like if someone, you know, is at the store and buying eggs, flour, milk, and butter, and chocolate chips, and they have a chocolate chip recipe in their hand, the only reason they do that is they know the future. right? If you see someone cooking, that's someone who knows the future. How many times have you seen someone, you know, putting together what's in a chocolate chip recipe, all the ingredients and the procedures, and a roast turkey comes out, unless it's been in there already, which they would have known anyway. So, but when it comes to future events, you know, people just fall apart. It's like we have no way of knowing. But that's part of the cosmic censorship, by the way. And one of the things here, and I'll share this, is get a little deeper as we go. The reason why I'm speaking, well, if I'm embarrassed, right, being human and all that, and it's like I just say being set apart, why am I speaking? Think about it. Well, because there's an old law that if someone does something within a society and doesn't know it's the wrong thing to do, that you can't hold them accountable for it, right? But once they find out it was the wrong thing to do, now they have to make do. They have to make right. Every time someone hears what I'm saying, their level of guilt increases, regardless if they believe it or not. You get it? So in one cosmic way, it's like I'm an informational grim reaper. I'm spreading guilt amongst mankind to make it easier for the gods to do what they have to do. I don't have any altruistic or swollen head or like I'm greater or whatever. That's why I'm working for the gods or whatever. But there is no other rational explanation. Right.
Well, right. And, and I plan to visit this topic with you a little later when you're done with your train of thought currently. So go ahead.
Well, train of thought is done. But the gods, you know, we say the gods. Well, you want to spell it with an S or a Z. It doesn't matter. As long as you say it, it sounds like gods, plural.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. And there's also the subject of Satanism and atheism and paganism. And if you know, those, someone wanted to bring me in on a discussion recently about all those. You know, the religions versus Satanists versus atheists versus pagans. So what's the difference? What I mean by that is that all the mainstream religions, you will not find what they're talking about as being a god as existing, number one, anything memorialization or history, right? Because remember, what people don't acknowledge, if you could do some real hardcore research, you will find that government entities in ancient Egypt, even until medieval Europe, acknowledged the gods and actually cited a lot of these paranormal events in their official paperwork. Okay.
Well, see, now I got to tell you, I object a little bit, though, because to throw pagans all into that,
But hold on. But hold on. Yes, you can, because there's two types of paganism. You have the ignorant. You have the ignorant, and then you have the fashionable one. Like right now, it's fashionable to be pagan. Anybody could say, you know, just get a bunch of tattoos, a long coat, and dark hair glasses, and you're pagan. Or you have the rites of various pagan groups that were considered to be pagan in native cultures by the Catholic Church, who is more pagan, just as pagan as they are.
Right.
But, right, so there's a pagan war. Right. So, you know, if you don't think Christianity is 150% pagan and or Judaism or any of these other Islam, oh, boy, and Buddhism. Yeah. Here's an example of how twisted they change it every so often, you know, like Vatican II or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the Judaism has been changed three times in the past 200 years. Now, here's an interesting piece of research. I kind of looked at this. I found it in some notes. I looked it up recently on the Internet. I couldn't find it. But we'll do a religious history one day, but the interesting tidbits. The oldest known statue of a Buddha is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art somewhere, I guess on their East Asian exhibit. And it was extracted from a temple near Afghanistan. And guess what it looks like? Doesn't look like that little fat guy that everyone likes to hang out with, right? Or party with, right? It looks like a tall guy, white guy in a tunic with a beard and a mustache and curly hair like you see in Greek statues in the Greek section. And it's not a mistake. So how did it morph from that to the little fat guy? Because people love making stuff up. don't believe me. Look it up. If anyone's a real good keyboard warrior, research what is the oldest known statue of Buddha. Right. And you'll be like, wait a second. That's not what, you know, we've been shown for the last 300 years. Right.
Well, just like it would make absolutely no sense. You know, the whole Christian, imagery makes absolutely no sense.
To who?
To me, because given if I accept their time period, if I accept their region,
that's it.
He doesn't look like Ted Nugent, dude. It doesn't happen. No,
well, Well, here's the, that's why I tell people you can, in 3 seconds you could prove that Shroud of Turin is a fake. 3 seconds, not even. He's got long hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also he was killed by stoning, so he wouldn't have any flesh on his body. So, I mean, the thing, it's such a joke. But here's, let's go back to the Satanists. Now, if you look at all the ancient texts memorialized that Satan, or the adversary, is in control of all of the institutions on a man's society, whether it's medical, social, religious, industrial, academic, on and on.
Legal.
So let me ask you, illegal? Yeah, so, mm-hmm. All right. So is Christianity mainstream religion controlled by Satan? Absolutely, without a doubt. So is all the other ones. So if you really want to know who the Satanists are, now you can't confuse that with, let's say, these satanic groups that are dubbed like the Temple of Set, or that other group that comes out of South America that worships the goddess of death. Most people don't know about that. All the narcotraficos give tremendous funds so they could kill, that she would put a curse on their enemies. You know what I mean?
That's a different cult. I mean, really,
those,
what you're talking about.
Those are not Satan. The Temple of Set and these other cults, that's not Satan. Yeah. Those are minor lords. Those are revived deities, revived minor gods from Egypt, northern part, the Druid. By the way, you know who the Druids are? The Druids were the Babylonian priests that left Babylon during the early times. They didn't want them anywhere in Europe, and they settled up there. So, you know, what do cannibals, birthdays, and dolls have in common? Mm-hmm. So by the time they became popular or viewed as they really chilled out and changed their program. But, you know, the Wiccans, you know, they put people in, you know what appling, bobbing for apples meant, right? If you put your head in this boiling pot of water and took an apple out, we wouldn't kill you. Right. Druid priests. Right. So that's where the witches look so ugly, because the ones that did dare to do that. Think about bobbing for an apple in a boiling cauldron of water. It was actually water and human feces and urine. The boiling water, as you're trying to bite the apple with your hands tied behind it, would go into your ears and your eyes and burn out your eyes and burn out your ears and disfigure your face. And if you try to go back to the village or the town, they didn't want you. So if you survived, that you lived out in the woods, boil, toil and trouble. Right. So that's where you get the witch thing and the bobbing for apples. So anyway.
That's where the archetype comes from, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it goes on and on and on. And, entertain. But the interesting thing about that is, again, the atheist means without a God. And if you actually look at what people are calling God, there's nothing like that at all. So I might as well say there's nothing there. It's like as if I take you out to the parking lot. I want to show you my new car, Chuck, and I show you a picture of the car.
Right.
It's not what you meant, is it? So there's many levels to that, as well, if you want to go there. Now, the atheists are a fun bunch to play with, because there's two types. They're the ones that were in the religions and got so disgusted and left, which you can't blame them. Right. And then you've got the other ones that have never inquired, and you can't blame them either, because intuitively people know that you're not going to learn anything in school anyway, right? And they're also lazy to a certain degree, but they're also chosen from the gods to be an example, because there are gods that will deny that the gods exist. Like when there was a film about that for Satan's first lie to mankind was that he does not exist. Right. But doesn't a robber or a thief that walks into a shop also deny that he's one? You know,
of course.
So, yeah. So there's many levels to that. And the atheists are easy. You know, when I say God, your law comes from your God. And I just say, well, Greek, I don't have one. I'm like, well, then you get your law. Where do you get your laws? From the state? And they're like, yeah. Well, I said, well, in the state is your God. And they even have one for you, a woman with statue of a woman with scales. And and guess what? Your high holiday is April 1st. That's your holiday. So, you know, and by the way, just swing by, let's mention law and legal. You know, if you ever heard of the Bar Association, you know, all the judges, all the lawyers, you know, and they're all over the world, too. Every country has one. Mm-hmm. If you think you don't, you haven't done your research. Can you, this is a rhetorical question, and I'll answer it as well. Can you show me the legislative act that created the Bar Association, A, and B, allows them to practice solely in the courts, and C, the pillar of the legal society? Can you show me any law that actually created them and allows them to operate the way they do? And the answer is no. They just seem to have been crept in. And by definition, they're an association like the Sierra Club, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, Cancer Foundation or whatever. They are just a loose association. But because they have control over your mind, because they represent the adversary on the earth, how do you gain such position? Power. Take control of the education system, because now, you control the education system. You know where you're going to extract your fresh new crop of enforcers, meaning law enforcement, put them in uniform because you control what they think. And also you're going to have a big crop of victims there, willing victims, because you control what they think. Let me ask you, out of the 12,000 hours of education from K through 12, do they spend 5 minutes on how to write a court brief?
Nope. Not that I've ever seen. Nope.
Yep. They explain to you the difference. Right. So all these people are explaining what the ills and problems of their society is, and no one is analyzing where you get your law from. I keep hammering this. We get your law from your God, law from your God. There's a difference between legal and lawful. And I'm not going to hammer the bar, because that's like saying we're not going to serve popcorn at movies anymore, or like they try to do in New York. No more soft drinks or whatever. Why? The purpose of these things is to accommodate the people. The thing is, they don't have to accommodate you. And here's a little secret, folks. When you hear something judicial, these guys dragging you to court for tickets or anything, those are non-judicial matters. The only judicial matter you could ever experience is like when a neighbor's dog bites you and you go to him and say, your dog bit me and you need to make it right, and he ignores you. That's judicial. Someone tries to poke your eye out and they don't want to make recompense or whatever. That's judicial. The rest of it, any other issue, is administrative. That's why, what is government called? This is called the Trump what? Administration.
Administration.
It's all administrative. And every state capital has an administrative court, and it's empty. And if you ever go to one of these guys for one of these things that these bar attorneys try to drag in, they're like, oh, we're so glad you found out about us. We're hired to stay here, but no one ever comes here. Now, the attorneys have also made sure that you don't find out about them, too, through plausible deniability. Anyway, it's just really crazy. But I'm not saying, look, Shakespeare had the right idea on them, but the point is this. They're accommodating you because you're a nasty society with a capital S. And that is a very accurate judgment call. Look, these people set up permanent circuses in their neighborhoods and they think things are going to go well. You know what a circus is, a church, right? Look it up. Yeah, it's a permanent one. You think things are going to go anyway? So you have all of your mainstream religions practicing straight up demonology, straight up out of, but it's demonology like third grade level, all of your mainstream religions, period. And you think things are going to go well and you want the Bar Association members to help you. Yeah. I want off this rock. How about you, Chuck?
No, listen, me too, but this is where I started to object to the whole thing about pagans. Why? Because I adhere to some of that. And the reason is, and I will identify myself as a pagan. I think it's the most honest description I have for who I am when it comes to this. But here's the thing. There's a bit of a difference between what is fashionable and what is promoted as pagan and what is actually truly pagan. Okay. And you did point out some interesting pieces of the history there. Love when you do that. One of these days, I want you to talk about the Roman paganism that helped to bridge that gap, if you will. Because that was a whole other interesting grouping of things that came together, including, practices that most people would identify with something called voodoo today. But anyway, moving forward, the thing is that my understanding, what I have come to reckon with, is that the gods communicate to me, to anyone who is living, through the presentation of their works. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this does seem a bit disconnected and a bit disjointed, but it is very honest. I have never actually sat down and had a conversation with a god where I've been responded to. All right. So I will say that I feel as though I've been communicated to by the creation of various works, which are governed by and literally generated by and have their genesis, so to speak, with certain deities. Okay. And there are multiple deities. We've had that discussion, and anybody who sees it any other way, I don't understand. Atheists are fun, though. They really are. But it may sound a little more convoluted coming from me, but I think this is the most honest way that I could reconcile.
Well, no, that's fine. Well, why don't you lie to us then? Anyway, I'm just joking. But here's the point. Here's the point. What do you think?
Because people get on the radio shows and lie straight to people all the time.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You know.
But here, let me just give you the point here, because ultimately the criticism of being all atheist or pagan or satanic, which is very easy to rationalize. Let's set that aside for a minute. And remember, we used to have discussions that the gods are not, unlike human society, have hierarchies, either social rank, military rank, however you see, there's a ranking system, rank and file in every social group or a social entity, right?
Absolutely correct. And I want to say something. You're the only individual I have ever heard say that publicly. By the way, I've heard that in circles here and there, and through the teachings that I have learned over the years, I've heard that said privately, quietly. Nobody ever explains that, but it is the absolute truth as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And why do I think that? Because I imagine so. No, it's observable.
All right, go ahead. Let's just use the military analogy. Let's say the U.S. attacks France, sends the troops over, and their troops are marching in. If you're, let's say, what they use loose term resident in France, do you have the four-star general knocking on your door, or is it some grunt infantryman with 90 days boot camp knocking on your door?
Definitely the grunt.
Yeah, the infantry. Mm-hmm. So right now, the infantry of the spiritual world, the grunt level, is what's been let out on mankind. So let's just, if you want to elaborate on paganism, because I've actually had discussions with quote-unquote paganisms that pagans, quote-unquote, that I found out really have malicious intent. They want to do like harm and do curses and stuff. And that stuff is not difficult once you understand this basis that I'm explaining. And I'm explaining it to him. And one guy comes back and he says, I got a lot of power from just listening to what you're saying. I said, my intent is just to explain how the system works, not what you do with it. But if you want to just go out and do it like that, I have no interest in it because – you know, I deal with a different level. I deal with a much higher level, which is you got to wait for me to do it, right? That's why, you know, I do weather work. People like stop the rain in Houston. I'm like, rain? What, are you joking? They don't need rain. They need fire and brimstone. You know? But anyway, the other thing is this. The information that is required to understand or comprehend how the gods work is very, very simple. But if you look at the character, okay, of who you're discussing it to, no matter how simple or easy the information is, it is very, very difficult. Because most people, this is their character. If you listen, Chuck, we're going to land on this planet called Earth. They're stubborn. They're rebellious. They're self-centered, right? Right? You see what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, this thing about faith, you will not find faith in any text. It says the faith, meaning of a specific action. You'll never find belief in any ancient text. Belief simply means you're getting foreknowledge of something that's going to happen. You see?
Well, I've spoken to so many. To be belief before, obviously, the be being, you know, something
be lived,
that is coming.
Be lived.
Exactly.
Right.
Be live.
This is what I
want
to get on. If you know any atheists, you could rub their nose in it. You know, that's a metaphor for dogs. But I don't really want to beat on them because they're very inactive in many cases. Right. But here's the thing. Have you ever heard of an atheist say goodbye? That's an old English term that means God be with ye. Just like adios in Spanish means to God. Right.
Right.
So do they say what they mean and mean what they say when you read books on atheism or evolution and every other word is design and creation?
So often when you and I part ways, we say ciao to one another. But
that's another thing, you know. By the way, let me throw this in order to be considered. I like to, you know, I came up. I'll go over it with you. Before the hour, after I got time, explain why the human sacrifice is going on. I have several times already, and some people can hear it, some people can't. I think this will be a good place to do it. But when I explained this to someone, I was buying something from a used piece of furniture once, and the guy who owned it was a high level Freemason. I told him this, and he got really angry. He says, "I spent 30 years in there for them to tell me this, and how did you get it?" I said, I just studied on my own and I just meditated on, you know, putting the information together, you know, like chewing the cud.
Right.
And he was so upset, you know, like how dare I discuss the inner circles of these societies and public, you know. I'm like, well, anybody could figure it out. I mean, it's rational. But I mean, there's many. We'll bring that up. But again, just to go back to the point before that, the inner circles of, you've heard La Cosa Nostra, right? You had to be from Sicily, but within that group, in order to be a capo, let's say, they did a little genealogy, and in order the overt genealogy was, you had to be Sicilian, okay?
Right.
But when they discovered that, they said, well, the only way you're really a Sicilian is if you're one-third Judean, one-third Greek, and one-third Roman. That's how you qualified as being Sicilian. So I'll put that out there. Anyway.
No, that's absolutely true.
I didn't say Jewish, right? I said Judean. There's a difference in one thing. I said Greek, which is Greek, and Roman, which is Italian, right?
Right.
You had to be a third. And that's why a lot of guys never made it, even though they were from Sicily, you know, because they just didn't show up. They got records. They got the Vatican. Anyway, I don't like talking about it. That's going to be the biggest discotheque in the world in the future anyway. So they already got all the cocaine and the gay guys, but. So anyway, hey, look, you know, let's be honest, right?
You got it. Go ahead.
So there's many levels there, but the human sacrifice thing is important. You know, they had the pizza parlor scandal a while back. I forgot what it's called.
Oh man, you're talking. Please don't tell me that you subscribe to the Pizzagate
stuff. No, right? I don't. No. But how many times have you heard me say? You probably went around 4 or 5 years ago with Seth on roundtables. Even 10 years ago, I said there's going to be an increasing discussion of ancient things as time goes on. Rituals, gods, religions. There's going to be a big revival. None of it will be accurate, but the people will be focused on it.
Well, this is our earliest discussion, actually, Greg. A couple of years back, you and I were still discussing this, and I agreed with you that's exactly what we were going to see, because I was already starting to see it maybe 2-3 years ago, that that exactly this is happening, and I had no idea why. I had to be honest with you. I had no idea why, but certainly it was going to become even more... More entrenched in pop culture, even more entrenched in, you know, everything. Everything. It's going to permeate everything.
Let me make it really simple and easy. Simple and easy. Why? Okay, you're at a racetrack or something circular, and you're at the starting line. Now these days, they got the blue screen thing. They change it on TV. But let's say you're really there. When you're at the starting line, you see certain things, you know, like the highest advertisement is at the starting line of billboard. You'll see certain things that you see at the starting line of a racetrack, let's say, right? You'll see the judge, you know, where he sits. And, you know, you can visualize it's the most active place, right? All right. Now, where's the finish line?
Same exact thing, place.
So what are you going to see at the finish line?
Same thing you see at the starting line.
All right, that's it. We're done. Easy, simple.
That is perfect. That is a perfect explanation.
That's why you're going to see, what's a revival? To revive, to bring back. None of it will be accurate. Why? Because you got this. You rely on the stupid rectangle. He who controls the stupid rectangle controls information. He who controls the gold controls the rule laws, right? Anyway. So the purpose of the stupid rectangle, by the way, is so that everybody has instant communication. Don't ever think you're going to get what you're looking for on there unless you're really looking for something. That's if you got to listen to that 3 times, what I just said. So unless you're looking for something, right? So the thing about the human sacrifice is very interesting, because you know how we said earlier, the whole thing about, look at the schedule of events rotating around the season, spring planting, summer growth, fall breakdown, winter is an interim period. I never really get into winter, but in agricultural society, you got to be on the farm for spring. You got to be on the farm for summer because you have certain things, the harvesting then also maximum growth, and you got to be on the farm for the harvest in the fall. So the winter is when you fix your, you know, you do your rye, your winter rye and your wheat, and it's a lot slower, right? Because things aren't growing in the winter, really.
Right.
Your root vegetables and stuff, that's about it. So that's when you put a new roof on your house. That's when you fix the wagon. That's when you go on a trip, right? You go on a trip.
Well, obviously, yeah, you're going to do all those things that you're too busy and tied. Tied to the farm for otherwise,
the planting or, you know, sowing, the growing and the reaping, you must be present, or you're at least in mind as much as body as possible. Wintertime, you can afford the distance. So distancing long travel events, things happen in the winter. I'm saving this, the soup, you know, when I go, okay, you know, spring planting, summer growth, fall harvest, and winter is your break, you know, your interim period. That's really easy. There's a lot more to that. I wanted to do some private sonic events to get into the, you know, like 4 hours on the springtime, 4 hours on the summer, with all the details, world history, just so people get an idea. But why bother? You know, I mean, anyway, I'm only one third Greek, you know, but anyway, I mean, I'm 100% Greek, not one third. I don't fit in the other category. I'm sorry, not one third Greek. I'm just Greek. I can't fit the other two thirds anywhere else.
In other words, listen, one third Greek is probably me, actually. So that's kind of funny. Go ahead.
There you go. Yeah, maybe I was referring to you. So let's go back to the, you know, we got a few minutes here. I'll throw it in. So the agricultural society is very important on that, because remember, the people back then, they had more of a, let's say, relationship, open and however you want to, acknowledgement of the gods. And what's very interesting is the two-way communication. You know how mankind even today questions, what's the meaning of life? What are we doing? You know, what's the most important organ in the body, right? How about that for a question? What's the most important organ in the body? You know, well, here's the thing. Agriculturally, what's the most important product of agriculture? Well, is it the actual crop you're bringing to market or stockpiling, or is it actually the seed? Because the seed is required for next year's crop, because if, no matter how well you do, without a seed, you're only going to be farming for a year. Right. And this also holds true. If someone says, what if I buy the seeds, Greek? Well, you know, who you bought them from also had to consider the seed. Right. So in order to have to continue, you must have a seed. So where does the seed from mankind come from? When I say mankind, I mean man and woman. It's the genitalia, the phallus of the male. Right. And the gynus of the woman, using Latin terms here. Right.
Of course.
OK. Mm-hmm. So that's why. You see, wherever you go, phallic symbols, gynic symbols, everywhere in architecture, in their sigils, in their innuendo, and right? Think about it. You know, what do you think these things are? People say, well, look at all phallic symbols. Look at all the, you know, this is the, you know, the wreath, you know, is the gynic symbol, right? All these things. This has gone pervasive on and on. This is why. Because that is the because without those organs, now keep in mind the goddess religion, what she's trying to do to that, right? Anyway.
Well, and here's the thing, without sexual congress, okay, let's just be honest, without sexual congress in total, there is nothing. That is why so much of society, in truth, the symbols and the sigils and everything else you're talking about revolve around this. Without it, we have
no continuation.
Nothing. No continuation. So
it's about continuation. That's why the people who want to change it, they're not happy with what they got, but they want you to be happy with what they want to turn it into.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about that, right? What I just said, right? That's exactly what's going on, right?
Oh, exactly.
I'm not happy being a man, but you better be happy with me being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But forget about that's what if there was a dictator that said everybody's got to be, you know, males with males, females with females. Otherwise, we put you in a death camp. I know the possibility, statistically, the possibility exists, whether it's one in quadrillion, it doesn't matter. Think about that. The life on Earth would end in 40 years.
OK, if you were a successful dictator. Yes.
Right. So this is not, you know, and the whole thing about being homophobic. Oh, here comes a homo. I'm afraid. No, the whole thing's got to go away. You know, but here's the other thing. Let me throw this in there. Oh, I had a lot of people say, oh, you're like a Bible guru. You're an Old Testament kind of guy. Aren't you upset about all this stuff going on with gay marriage and all this other stuff? You know, it's a part of a religion. There is no basis for it. But obviously, it's chemically induced, just like in certain religions. They do other things to the body. Right. Physical. And I'm like, it's a Greek. How come you don't never speak out against it? You're such an Old Testament guy. I said, because I understand what they call the Old Testament. I know what's coming, and I'll just say it. You know what's coming? A lot of people are against what's going on with that. I'm neither for it or against it, because what they're doing is they're coming out, right? It's a coming out, right? Well, not only are they coming out and being visible, there are records being kept on them. Yes or no?
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm.
And later, when the whole thing does the switcheroo, where these guys, you know, the new world order is like, no more. We're going to go back to an old law that if you do that kind of thing, you know, it's get the ultimate end, right? So they already
That's why everybody's behavior is getting registered, and we're down to the last couple of minutes here, so I don't want to cut off any points.
The big point, maybe we'll bring a couple of minutes. It looks like 10, but we break before, right? So let me finish up then on the human sacrifice, or maybe flip it over.
Sure.
But anyway, so this is why they're all coming, it's your birthday, right? So the same with people with tattoos and other things like that. You know, why do you think everybody's getting tattoos? You know, you read about 1/3 of the population being anyway. Now, here's the interesting part. When you going back to the gods and how, you know, the flower, the projection of the of next year's crop with humanity, the genitalia. Mm-hmm. Right, the most important organ, not because it's the most important organ, you know, but men tend to think with the little head anyway, but you know, whatever, however you want to play around with the words, but the thing is, what is the fruit of that seed of the genitalia? What is the fruit? What is the fruit that comes out of that? Right, it's the baby, isn't it?
Yes.
Right. So when you, it would be the best fruit from the best part of the body. So when you go to your God, you offer him the best of your fruits, don't you? That's the root of human sacrifice.
Mm.
Think about it.
So literally what's happening here is that by people destroying their own sexual organs, I mean, this is literally
cutting off their
Yeah.
They're showing that we're now going to be dedicating, because the basis of the goddess religion is that you were once like gods. But when you were in that position, you were neither female or male, or you were both. And the way you attain a godlike society, so you don't have to offer anything to these guys, I'll give you the key, is she says that, she doesn't whisper in my ear, you have to study this, is that you encourage male with male union, you encourage female with female union, and when the females procreate, they do it without the men, and the product is hermaphroditic. Now, hermaphroditic doesn't mean to be at birth, because there was a tribe in South America that was nearly wiped out. They didn't develop their sex until they were 7 or 8. So when they were born, they were both. And at 7 or 8 years old, I think it was like northern Peru or something, the sexual, they couldn't be determined. Have you heard of these guys?
I have heard of it, but I'm not clear on it. Yeah.
Anybody could look that up, a keyboard warrior. I mean, it's like, you know, once I found out humans are not interested in evidence, I was like, why bother give references? But if anybody, sometimes I do get the message, Greek, I listened to it 15 times. I looked up what you said. It was hard to find, but I found it. I was like, great, thanks. So there's your human sacrifice, because the body's, you know, the organ is the best fruit, and the fruit of the best organ is the genitalia because of continuation. What is the fruit product? I mean, it's kind of crazy when you see it manifest, you know, in what they call human sacrifice. Now, they don't know why they're doing it anymore, but they're doing it. Just like ask a voter, you know, why do you vote? I don't know. Why do you go to church? I don't know. They don't need to know why they're doing it. They're locked in. So there you go. Got a couple of minutes before the break.
Look. Exactly. And look, a vote is a vow, first of all. And generally, that is you're swearing to adhere to the leadership. This is why I do not vote any longer. I've got to tell you. And I want to talk to you about that in the next hour a little bit, because you have privately criticized me about criticizing leadership. And I've got to tell you something. And a few of the people that listen to a lot of what you do are not thrilled with me about that as well. Not going to name any names. But the fact is, I feel as though it is incumbent upon me to criticize that which I do not find to be lawful, logical, or remotely moral. So there I am. I feel this need to explain it, much like you feel a need to explain it, because you can't say at some point that no one objected.
Also, what covenant you live by trumps your surroundings, and no pun intended. The covenant that I live by, you're not to criticize the leader of any people. Why? And this will help maybe during the break ruminate on it, because the reason the leadership is so bad or so good is because the people are. The gods put them there, not your vote.
No, and that is absolutely correct, and it sort of explains the Agent Orange there giving us the administration, which, if you missed it earlier in the hour, the Greek explained to you why it is called an administration. We're definitely having an uncommon discussion here tonight with the Greek on the Ocelli Effect, and I advise that if you found anything that we've had discussed here so far to be of remote reality in your world, you need to stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Examine our attitude towards peace itself. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. I am not referring to the absolute, infinite concept of universal peace and goodwill, of which some fantasies and fanatics dream. I do not deny the value of hopes and dreams, but we merely invite discouragement and incredulity by making that our only and immediate goal. Let us focus instead on a more practical, more attainable peace, based not on a sudden revolution in human nature, but on a gradual evolution, on a series of concrete actions and effective agreements, which are in the interests of all concerned. There is no single simple key to this peace, no grand or magic formula to be adopted by one or two powers. Genuine peace must be the product of many nations, the sum of many acts. It must be dynamic, not static, changing to meet the challenge of each new generation. For peace is a process, a way of solving problems. With such a peace, there will still be quarrels and conflicting interests, as there are within families and nations. World peace, like community peace, does not require that each man love his neighbor. It requires only that they live together in mutual tolerance, submitting their disputes to a just and peaceful settlement. And history teaches us that enmities between nations, as between individuals, do not last forever.
At organicwebdesign.eu, you're sure of high-quality work that's reliable and competitive. For more information or to get a quote, go to organicwebdesign.eu and contact Tony.
There are too many puppets in the mainstream and alternative media. Don't let nobody sell you poisons or lies. Get real honest info. Listen to the Ocelli Effect 5 days a week. And if you want more of the alternative's alternative, visit Ocelli.com and think for yourself.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Okay, can we get quiet, please? Everybody sit down. Young man in the front row, spit that gum out. Thank you. Cherry flavor. And now the moment we've been waiting for. The man whom we all know and have grown to love over the years. Who won the Nobel Peace Prize for making the largest flavored Jell-O shooter that the world has ever seen. And a great man of science who proved to us once and for all that no matter how much cherry flavored Jell-O you put in your swimming pool, you still can't walk on water. I give to you Chuck O'Kelly! Yeah!
Second hour begins of the O'Kelly Effect broadcast live from the facilities of O'Kelly.com. Do appreciate you for tuning in. Also appreciate the fact that we have the Greek with us tonight, having an uncommon conversation. Yes, I took the time to emote that clearly so that we didn't have any sort of issue. This is certainly an uncommon conversation. We've gone through this at breakneck speed as per usual, but really, I think this is a rarity because I don't recall ever being on the air with the Greek where he's had this much energy and actually gone through this many subjects this quickly and succinctly. So this is amazing to me, man. I'm really enjoying this, but I do have points of contention as per usual. This is the thing we always did, right? Mm-hmm. One way or another, I want to challenge some of what you're saying. Now, sometimes I do that intentionally to prove the Greek's point. And other times I have a legitimate sort of, question that makes me want to, register my objection. So here we go. We talked about a great many things in the first hour, and I'm telling you, if you missed it, you're going to have to go get it back and get it in the archives. We did just discuss talking about it on, putting it out on YouTube. They'll probably flag this and ban it, but, what else is new? I'm surprised a lot of the things that you've had to talk about have gotten out there, to be honest with you, at all. But back to it.
Let me interject, because I never said I'm just saying this to make the world a better place. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, that's true. But then again,
it's screwed if you say that. Yeah.
Well, that's true. But YouTube is not there to make the world a better place either. So, anyway, back to it. I find it interesting that that you've kind of cautioned me against criticizing the people's leadership.
No, I have never cautioned you. I say it's not lawful to do so under the covenant that I live by.
Well, when somebody says to me that it's not lawful, that to me sounds like
I won't engage. In other words, I won't expand on it. In other words, I won't help you push the car. You know what I mean? When someone's car dies on the side of the road, you're on your own with that one.
No, fair enough. But, to me, when someone says something is unlawful, I view myself as rather lawful according to a covenant that I understand. Okay. And I view this as very strange because it seems to me as though if you are seeing things that are unfolding around you in society that are out of whack, that are, sick, twisted, counterproductive, poisonous to your fellow man, to me, based on the way I understand, my covenant, I'm obligated to criticize, to speak out, to push back, to do something to disrupt that which is counterproductive, negative, blatantly, overtly evil. And, you and I have kind of tangled over this subject a few different times where, I've said to you, look, I'm going to speak out against vaccines. And you say, why? The people want them, obviously. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. And I get that. And the quality of leadership is poor because the quality of those that are needing to be led is also poor. So I get that part. But speaking out against this stuff or pushing back or resisting it because it is not part of what I understand as lawful or reasonable or logical, I think okay. I'm obligated to do so. And I think other people might have that question in their minds. Like, should we not criticize? And even here's the other thing that I brought up during the break real quick, and then promise I'll shut up and let the Greek get back at it. The thing is that we both, you and I, are more than happy to criticize, you know, the circuses, the churches. Okay.
Circus Maximus. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Christian church, especially, we're more than happy to do so because of what it is. Okay. To me, the Christian church is also part of the leadership of the people. Now, right. Given that there's a lot of power that's exerted by figures who are part of the superstructure of the church, I think it's evident. Given the fact that there are nations that claim to be Christian nations, there are groups of people, large societies of people that claim to be Christian societies. I think we are absolutely obligated to explain to them that, first of all, what you think is Christian isn't Christian. But second of all, you're unlawful, you're immoral, and you're absolutely practicing what you claim not to be. I think pointing out hypocrisy is a useful thing to do as well. Now, all of that having been said, what is your answer to, you know, why it is that maybe it should be viewed as unlawful to do this? Because to me, I feel compelled.
It's simple.
Absolutely compelled to do it. Go ahead.
I'll tell you, it's simple. Look, again, you get your law from your God. Now, your law doesn't mean traffic law, tax law, whatever. It can, but it also really means how you keep time, what you wear, what you eat, how you go into contracts, how you raise a family, how you farm, how you, right? Everything, right? It just happens to be there. Do not, it's actually in one of the books of wisdom, right? Do not criticize a leader of a people. And it's obvious why. Right, because it goes over and over that mankind was made to be anarchist. Means no one at the top of your society. It's called the castle doctrine. Right, everyone is the king of their castle, and you are all subject to a god, not another man. But you know, eventually one thing came to another. I'll discuss how that all came together, the monarchies, when I get all my ducks in a row, let's say, right? I'll do a little bit more research on stuff that I've looked at, right? And discuss man's need for what they call government or monarchy and how it's not natural, right? Well, it seems natural, right? Mm-hmm. But in other words, anarchy doesn't mean, it's a Greek word, means and means without, like, right? And archos means someone at the top, because we are actually the supreme. We are the supreme beings in the universe, second to the most high God. We are actually supreme to most of the gods, by the way. Now, this is another thing, and the angelic beings and all that, and they know it. So we are supreme to pretty much everything in the universe except for the most high, period. And that, okay. Why would we have someone ruling over us? Now, the other thing is, I got to say this. It's like I want this discussion regarding leadership. I want it to be eating at a 5-star restaurant. Now I feel like I've got to eat out of a dumpster, right? But this is not on you. This is just the topic, because you know what? It's not just you're bringing it up. A lot of people bring this up to me, that meaning a lot that I do run into, right? Because political aspects are very important to them. But let me just say this. So this is a setup. You ready? I'm going to set you up, but I'm not going to make it hurt or anything. This is the setup, Chuck. So the way
you can hurt me, set me up. I don't care.
Okay. Well,
let's make the point. I'm more than happy to be the tackling dummy. It doesn't matter. Let's just
no. This is a rhetorical setup. Just like I'll give you one I do for various religious groups too. And there's no way out of it.
Cool.
All right. So the way you would actually. On a social level, you know, using social media, a soapbox, whatever, you can object to the political reality or the leadership structure. The next level would be doing it using that, showing that they are contrary to the laws of the country, right? In a legal, more legal, a little more formal fashion. Are you with me?
Right? I'm with you on both of these. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and that's how prohibition was done, and women's suffrage was done. It only took like 80,000 people to change that, right? But they did it in a way that it's not, you know, 40 million people on Facebook won't do it like these people did before, right?
Yeah, no
because
kidding.
They were a little. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So the way. Let me just give you two things here that'll really put it in perspective. One of them is if you look at all the ancient writs also talk about money being very important, and everyone really does things for money typically when they go out into the world, right? Now, the rules, the paramount rule that is most directive regarding money would be Title 12, you know, the U.S. codes, right? Well, now, really, they were not truly enacted, but they're the only prima facie evidence we have. Now, if you look up Title 12, Section 411, I could read it, but I won't. It's USC Title 12, Section 411. It says Federal Reserve notes. If you don't know what that is, well, that's okay, because you've got about 2 million bank tellers in this country that don't know what Federal Reserve notes are also, right?
Yeah, so, no kidding.
Yeah. So what I mean by that is go look that up, and it'll basically, a paraphrase here, it's fairly accurate. Federal Reserve notes are to be used to make advances between Federal Reserve banks and to use by Federal Reserve agents, and no other use is authorized. Right? You get what
right.
I mean?
No,
so
that's
that
correct.
That green stuff. So if
now,
you're
hold
not
on, hold on, hold on,
it,
hold on 1 second though, because before you go where you're going, I know where you're going. Here's the thing. There are people that point out that at some point in time, everyone who was issued a birth certificate is effectively an agent of the Federal Reserve. Literally, they are a commodity of the Federal Reserve. But, well, because your birth certificate, as it's structured, is printed on bank paper and all that. OK. And there's documentation to show that you're kind of. You've been kind of made an active agent of the Federal Reserve in a way. It's a weird sort of argument,
well,
but I've seen the documents
facie,
for it.
It's not prima facie evidence of being a Federal Reserve agent. That's why when the quote-unquote Department of Public Safety, the sheriff or the police pull over somebody with a car or a truck and they find a whole load of cash, they go back to their patrol car and come back 20 minutes later and they start all over again. ID, please, registration, and like, I just gave it to you. And he's like, no, ID, please, all over again, as if he didn't ask him the first time. Why? Because they need to make sure that you don't have a Federal Reserve agent ID. Because if you don't, they're going to take the cash because it's contraband. Have you ever heard of anyone who had a large amount of cash taken from them, whether it was an airport or car? Have you ever spoken to anyone? That's what they do. They ask you, once they find the cash, it's as if they reinitialize the entire stop, as if nothing ever – they ask you for everything all over again just to confirm. You see, and then they go back to make the call. No, he doesn't have a Federal Reserve ID, so no, guess what? Cash goes. Are you familiar? Well, we can – that's another discussion perhaps, but I just brought in some real-world stuff.
No, I'm familiar with that, but I'm bringing in some real world stuff too here.
Let me just finish the thought with the Federal Reserve note. You're not supposed to use it, right? And that's also all the other stuff. Now, let me just interject this. What happened in the 30s, the U.S. government squandered everybody's money, just like a drunk that goes gambling.
Right.
Or just like somebody who went to the loan shark and he can't afford the 5% interest per week. And in order to keep the government, the country stable, he says, okay, they made it public by calling it a national bank holiday. They said, listen, people, there's no more money. So everybody gets a credit line, not a line of credit, a credit line. And the prima facie evidence of the credit line, you could look this up in the Health and Human Resources Act and all that. The prima facie is the birth certificate. It doesn't make you an agent. And that's why I've said all the banks have been closed. If you call the Federal Reserve, they say, we're not really a bank. We're really a banker's bank. But if you call the bank, they say, well, not really a bank. We're an institution of the Federal Reserve. So either way, they're passing the buck. So there's no banks either. But that's the credit line. It's very easy. And that's why if anybody tells you that the dollar is going to collapse, is a total effing idiot. But the thing is, that's how you get a lot of followers, right? Because people flock to – anyway. Okay. The other thing I want to bring up. Now, so in other words, if the leader of the people is lawful, he should say, listen, how many times have I talked about – I'm the leader of the people now, let's say, running for office. The economy needs to be better. But listen, guys, hate to break it to you. This Federal Reserve note stuff makes all of you felons, so we got to take care of that first, that law. How many leaders have come out and said that? None.
Well, how many leaders have come out and said that they shouldn't be a leader? Because
Let me go to the next one. Let me go to the next one. Title U.S. Code 45, Title 15. So it's basically a codes that talk about deceptive practices. Right? And it says any deceptive practice, according to this code, so USC 4515, I think. I'm going from memory. The purpose of this code is to declare deceptive practices in sales, representations, contracts, all that other stuff unlawful. And it applies to all trusts, corporations, individuals, except for banks. You get it?
That's kind of mind-blowing.
Look it up. Look it up. It's right there in front of you. How many leaders have come out and said, we have a deceptive practices law that excludes banks that could be as deceptive as they want? We need to change that. Because isn't the current president or the previous president, one before him, and the future president going to be talking about economic stability, economic growth, and jobs?
Well, they all do, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know what? Yeah, this is like Mickey Mouse. You know, like I said earlier, they don't need rain. They need fire and brimstone. But anyway, the whole thing is how serious do you consider your time in a waiting room? It's pretty serious because you're taking up time, right? Time is precious, right?
Well, you're losing time to something that could be a lot more productive than just sitting there. That's what the thing is. Yeah.
Now, what happens if you were born, you fell out between your mom's legs on the floor in a waiting room, and 40 years you wake up, you're still there? How does that make you feel?
pretty much the way I
don't
feel,
answer.
Actually,
don't answer. Yeah. Now you see how simple this is. It's kind of embarrassing to be the only one on the stupid rectangle discussing things like this. But hey, I'm not that embarrassed, you know. But I'm embarrassed enough. Come on, people. But anyway, here's the other thing, Chuck. Since you and I first started speaking, I said there's only a few 5 or 6 listeners, and it's true. There's only a few people that'll understand this, and those that are offended are not seeking the truth.
No, and I understand that, but let me just interject one other thing here, because you said the dollar collapsing. Anybody that thinks that that's going to happen is an idiot. Well, here's my problem with that. Hasn't every financial instrument that was created in such a way collapsed at some point in history?
No,
I mean, because without exception, without exception, they've disappeared. Certainly they've gone out of use. Wait a minute now. I can't take my, Civil War dollars and go buy a Pepsi at the store.
It's script. Script has never collapsed. Hold on. Script was always limited in use. Before the government squandered alleged treasury, went into these private deals and squandered everything, all the notes, Federal Reserve or not, said redeemable for lawful money. It said it right on them. Yeah. As a matter of fact, up until Nixon did the Bretton Woods Agreement, I spoke to someone a few months ago, and he says, when I knew Nixon, Bretton Woods, I took the bank account over to San Francisco Federal Reserve and demanded silver bars, and I had to catch a plane in 4 hours, and I got on the plane, the bars were still hot, and I was passing them around, you know? That was the end of lawful money. So, because it's a dual note. It still works. Like, for example, the rest of that is if you make a demand for lawful money, see, the other thing with the mark of an idiot is taxpayer dollars, because you're being taxed under economic theory and private contract. And your taxes don't pay for anything. They never have. It's economic theory. Where the money goes, no, actually, it doesn't go anywhere because it's just book entries. So the gods are playing. You know, the gods said it's been transmitted to humans that it's the love of money, not money. It's the love of money. It's the root of all evil. And they're probably like, let's take the money away. They're so stupid they won't notice it, and they're going to still chase it around just to show you how far gone they are.
Well, you can still have the love of money without the presence of it.
And that's what's going on. So there are many aspects to it. How do you fix something that's unfixable? It's like, can you bite your own teeth?
No.
Because it's not fixable. Don't even ask. You see, is it a paradox? No, because there's a third thing. It's called hysteresis. Hysteresis is the effect. You know, you have cause and effect. Well, hysteresis is when you have a cause and the effect does not equal the cause. It just keeps on going, right? So, is it possible to make something unfixable and have it keep on going for 2,000 years? You're witnessing it. Now, fortunately, what keeps it going so well is that we have the lifespan of 70, 80, 90 years old, so we can't really invest that much into changing it, right? So we think that everything, you know, is just matters within our lifetime.
I think that's why they removed away the education of the elders to the younger. They've absolutely destroyed the elder population for exactly this purpose, so that no progress could be made whatsoever, because everybody's got to start again from scratch with no wisdom being passed on. I know I'm using that word a little bit ill-advised, but you know what I'm saying here.
Wisdom is beyond knowledge. Knowledge is just knowledge. Wisdom is how do you apply the knowledge. It's the how-to. But the current crop of elderly are very, very bad shape. And I've had a couple of comments against that, and I don't counter-comment because they're illustrating it. They don't know. You know. But here's the thing. There's also a breeding program. You know, when you look at most dogs, like people, and even chickens, people, what came first, chicken or the egg? It's a chicken farmer. because what you call the chicken didn't exist like that until the chicken farmer bred it into that state, right? There was no meat on it, basically. It was just a tall, thin, lanky bird. Now, when you look at like certain bird dogs or water dogs, those were bred, selective breeding over hundreds, if not thousands of years from wolves, right? And if you want to talk about adaptation. Right. Now, if you look at humanity, it's a fact that stupid people have children. It's a fact that proportionately the dumber the people are, the more children they have. This is like the movie Idiocracy. And when I mean dumb, I mean in anything. I'm not talking about university. You see, generally, stupid people have a lot of children. So now you have this breeding program where you can have selective breeding where the people that are have more, let's say, inherent wit about them. Mm-hmm. Not breeding, and those that have less inherent wit about them, I'm using that term accurately, I hope, have less. So now you have a population, a proliferation of the population of the inferior wit, right? Not saying education here, you see? So that you have to include that as well, you see?
Well, so, I've fathered three children, so what does that say about me?
This is not about you and I. This is about disseminating information to a point where people can start realizing what's going on and stop saying, I'm so depressed. Well, what's the meaning of life? Or, you know, someone stepped on my cord and my cord is kinked. You know, the space heaters, you know?
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
The Greek is stepping on my cord and my switch is not working, you know, space heater, right?
No, look, I'm not getting offended. I'm just saying I don't find myself to be completely lacking of wit. Am I an exception here?
If it's shoe fits, it's fine. But what I'm giving you is the overall picture, so no one leaving after 2 hours could say, oh, I don't know why I'm here. Oh, I don't know what's going on.
Well, there's also the fact that we're seeing the rate of births drop in a lot of places, in the majority of the population. But yes, indeed, if you take a look at people that now the IQ test I know sucks, don't get me started on that, but people that do seem to have less cognitive strength are continuing to breed unabated. The rest of the population, though, is somehow being chemically induced or socially engineered to not do so. It appears as though the generation that will be left standing in about 15 years or so is going to be of a lesser intellectual prowess than its previous counterparts. I mean, that just seems observable to me objectively, Greek. That's what I'm seeing.
But let me just tell you, you know how the underground nuclear explosions changed the world, like we described earlier, right? You're going to have a lot of events happening overtly that people will not understand that's going to change the world. What you will be seeing in the future, that's why I saw someone in the chat, well, I disagree with the Greek about tattoos. Like, I'm making this up or I want this. You know, it's like, how stupid can you be? I'm just reporting on what you're too lazy to look up, you know, or your parents, you know, whatever. Didn't look up, and their parents, because this stuff has been around for thousands of years. The thing is, I'm just reporting. I don't believe in any of this stuff being said as believable until you do more research or understand where the source is, right? You know, I like him, so I believe him. No. You're making a fatal mistake. Right. Let me just bring it this way. There's going to be changes. I talked about the axial period, and I said around 2018, the 7-year period starts. Very simple. Time ended around 1998. There's a 5-year buffer zone before man's system comes on the scene. So you add 2003 plus 7, right? And then plus 7 on that, you know, brings you to 2017, then plus 7 on that, plus 7 on that, and then you've got a 3.5-year period. Very simple. And each period has a very specific aspect to it, and I've explained that loosely. Now, I reserve a lot of it because of consulting purposes, right? Mm-hmm. The public should never get all the information. I mean, just look at them, you know? here's the point. The point is what you're going to be seeing in the future, the people that are left, like right now you put 10 people in a room, only one of you is going to be here. But what you're going to be seeing is it's going to be based out of the Middle East. And of course, you're going to have people everywhere else in the world participating, but you're going to have a new crop of younger people suited to that will appear not suited today if they were. In other words, young people holding positions that were normally meant to be people of much greater age, right? This is what you're going to see. You're going to see younger people, you know, people that just came out of being teenagers running, you know, a country or running a big corporation, which is unheard of now, really. And if it happened today, it'd be like they couldn't get over anything other than how young they were. So it's not going to happen now. But also, this is known as the last generation. So a lot of the heinous acts, which will be considered normal, that are going to wipe out one third of mankind, which will be man against man. I'm not talking about a police force or an army. It'll be family member against family member, neighbor against neighbor, are also going to be done by young people. So when that's why I, on one of the last thing I call the, you know, the people that were born in the last few years, a little pricks. No matter how much you love him, you got to sleep with one eye closed after 2025, because when he finds out that anyone who has a tattoo should be put under, little 9 or 10 year old, whatever, is going to be, you know, trying to cut your neck off with a butter knife while you're sleeping. And yeah. I'm telling you, this is file it away, put it away for later, because it makes no sense now. Like 1995. Hey, listen, you know, those World Trade Center planes, planes are going to be hijacked by Arabs and they're going to fly into it, and they're going to turn to dust and fall. Everybody would laugh. Because we have airport security, and you can't hijack a plane with a box cutter. And those buildings were designed to take multiple hits, if not 100 hits, from airplanes anyway. Greek, you're stupid. I don't believe in that. Well, guess what?
And the Pentagon. And the Pentagon is going to be hit by something that's going to come from an aerial attack of some sort. Although we will not be in a natural state of war at the time, and it's not like the country will be being invaded. Just one strike on the Pentagon, and it's going to do a lot of damage and be the auspices for us going into Afghanistan. If you would have said that somebody in 1995, it would have been like, hey, listen, whatever you're smoking, bro, I want to buy some because it's got to be good. That would have been the answer. Yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the thing about Afghanistan and all the Middle East is you got to take all the teeth out. How are you going to have a union? Let's say, look at Europe before World War II. All the countries were nationalistic, right? How are they going to form an EU? No way. Come on. As a matter of fact, they didn't until Franco died, because Franco had weapons that were left over from the Third Reich. And by the way, I'm not a Nazi, so what they call Nazi. I'm not for any group, but this stuff about Nazis... Mm-hmm. Why academics call them Nazis? That's like, you know, calling a black person a nigger or a Spanish person spick. You don't use that term. That's a pejorative term. They're the National Socialist Party. You don't use that term. Nazi was never a formal term. It was like gook for Chinese or Japanese, you know, or nip. You don't use that. Have you ever seen nip referring to Japanese people in academic circles or in the news? Never. But why do they use the term Nazi? It's not because I'm sympathizing with them. I'm just saying, are you people paying attention? Oh, you know what? Have a nice day. It's your birthday.
Well, listen, Germans, they used to refer to them in the deep pejorative as Huns, actually.
Oh, yeah, or Krauts. Yeah.
Or Krauts, right. I mean, because, you know, and that's...
And they call them Krauts because you could smell them downwind cooking their kraut on the battlefield, 80 miles away.
It was also
flat Earth, right?
That too. And it was also anything to dehumanize them, to take away the title of them being a man or a woman, so that way, you know, and this happens all the time. That's why a gook is a gook. And, you know,
Franco, you see, Franco was in Germany. He had a lot of the armament, you know, the scientists also. But not only what I mean about nationalism, about the EU forming. I'll go back to the Middle East forming. They're in Afghanistan to buy time. You're going to see what we haven't discussed that I brought up is watch Jordan. The stuff that's going to be happening in Jordan's going to make your head curl. I mean, if your hair is curly, it's going to straighten up, and if it's straight, it's going to curl for a few days. What's going to happen there? And if you want to look at secular reasons, if you become an ally of the United States, they're going to screw you, right? Unless you got a big enough army like England or France to keep them off your back.
Oh yeah, that's Jordan, the guarantee. Actually,
Jordan is an ally. I mean, they don't know what they're in for, but it has nothing to do. This is written by the gods. Watch Lebanon. Lebanon is going to be one of the wealthiest ports, is going to have the wealthiest ports in the world that you have ever seen. And it's like, look at it now. It's like, well, Hezbollah, come on now. Yeah, well, watch how fast things change.
Well, wait, that's that whole finish line thing again, though, Greek, because, you know, the way I read history, Lebanon was actually the center for exactly that activity. It was the center of the world as far as being a port.
Yeah, Greece,
and,
Rome, Babylon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
And also for their forestry. There's going to be a revival and all this stuff, but this is going to happen so quickly. What you're not going to be getting again is missing airplanes, corrupt politicians, and what was the other one? Rapes and what have you had in the past 7 years? And financial collapse. You're not going to be getting all the screaming about that. anymore. That period is over coming by springtime. You're going to have a new thing to talk about, which is going to be reviving of old ideas and legitimizing of things that don't seem legitimate and delegitimizing things that are legitimate. And also there's a complicated aspect to how this goddess religion plays into all of it. And that's not going to come to fruition until this seven-year period is over. And you have the rise of these young, very young, charismatic people, surrounded by older people, of course, endorsing them.
Well, you know what's weird about that when you bring up the goddess religion, Greg, is that I get the most flack from females that believe that the goddess religions are the personifications of their gender and they are the empowerment for their gender. They were suppressed. They were suppressed due to a patriarchal society, and therefore this is the reemergence of the feminine power coming back. And I think they are misinterpreting this. Extremely.
Well, they lack discernment, and those people are on the lower hierarchy of that knowledge base. Just like, well, let's go back to the
like you were saying, though, there were goddesses that did that.
There are many. Actually, some of the highest aspects of ancient culture are personified as goddesses, like wisdom and healing. Correct. And things like that. Correct. So, but this one. Let's just say a malevolent entity, but it happens to be female. Just like if someone stuck you up in the middle of the night walking home or whatever, and they caught him later, took the mask off, happened to be a woman, and they say, oh, you're anti-feminine. No, it just so happens that I was robbed by a woman. It's not that all women – I'm not anti-woman. Anyway,
the criminal in the case. Yeah.
Yeah. It just happens to be the one. And it's an interesting thing because also let's go back to the ones that say they're feminine or whatever. There's an aspect of the duality that once that duality settles in, right, you don't have any action. It's part of the distraction. Also, it goes from one side to the other, because if you look at, for example, patriarchal societies, let's say the legal system, the big bad judge in the black robe, well, what's above his head outside at the highest point of the building is a statue of a woman. If you go to the big bad pope, patriarch, well, what does he hold highest? As statue of a woman, doesn't he? Mary, right?
Right.
So wherever you look, the big bad patriarch is bowing. He has memorialized and canonized female entity, hasn't he? So let's just say more accurately here is a goddess religion with a patriarchal priesthood. How's that?
That would be way more accurate. Yes.
Well, it's filling in the picture because these dummies don't see the whole thing. They're too nearsighted, right?
Well, so. See, but I'm not concerned when we're talking about the goddess. I'm not concerned with the priests. That's the thing. That's why I'm sitting there going, look, it is not.
But it seems they are. They can't see beyond it.
That's the point, though, isn't it? That they don't see beyond the priesthood because they're adhering to it. This is what the problem is, right? Because it's the priest who explains things to you unless you go study it for yourself.
And it's very difficult to study.
Yeah,
just like the history of the Bar Association. Oh, by the way, if you go back to the Bar Association, they'll tell you that it was created by a legislative act. But you know what? Go look up, go try to find that legislative act. Doesn't exist. So they lie even openly in their reference material. I mean, anyway, look, the people love that. I mean, that's what they want. You want to, the carnival's in town. You know what I'm saying? You don't go to the carnival because they're going to give you a flu shot. I don't care, Greek. It's a carnival, right? Anyway.
Well, there's many levels to it. Mm-hmm. Still not going to take the flu shot, but I will say this perfect segue into, you were talking about the imagery from the church and yeah, okay, there's the statue of Mary, but there's another image. Other people will argue if you say that, oh no, look, Mary is whatever, but the fact is that the
Queen of Heaven, that's Astarte, Queen of Heaven.
Oh, I know.
Call her that too. Yeah. That's not,
I know,
that's
but,
not scriptural. Yeah.
No, not scriptural at all.
And she's dead, by the way. Yeah, and if you read scripture, you know how she died, with a sword in her side. And her name was not Mary, the mother of the Christ biblically. It was Miriam.
Mm.
Anyway, but who cares, right? Because that's what I like to. I'm happy with what I believe in, Greek. That's what I've heard before. I found the Lord. I'm happy. I'm happy with what I believe in, Greek. I don't care about what you say. Yeah, go for it.
No, look, you know, if that's where you're at, okay, then this is probably a really irritating discussion. So let's make it a little more irritating. You know, because you know me, I'm all for agitates. If you make somebody itch, they're certainly paying attention to what's aggravating them. You know what I mean? So I'm more than happy to do so because.
But what about convulsing on the floor, throwing up with the last meal, though? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We don't want to do that, but if that's where they go, that seems to be their choice.
That's why we're on radio. Yeah, right. So, mm-hmm. Or what they call it. But go ahead about the other image you were saying. Which one are you on that?
Well, the other image I'm getting to is that, you know, people would say, well, you know, the real symbol of the church is actually the guy hanging there on the cross. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about that.
Accurately, yeah. Well, look, you know, when you do JFK research or any other researcher, the first thing you do is you need to examine what's put out in public, right?
Oh, all absolutely.
Right? And then you start looking, and then you want to look at the first accounts because, right, what was first put out also.
Well, look,
first in time is first in line, right?
Exactly. 60 seconds. Here's what I did. Right. I started to take a look at some television programs and listen to a couple radio programs about it. Then I said, OK, I'll go get the books and I'll look at those. These are secondhand accounts. I actually started to contact witnesses to get their firsthand accounts. Then I started to study what was released around that time regarding films, television, radio broadcasts, newspapers, etc. Then I delved into documentation because I was looking for something that was memorialized in order, you know, regardless of who had actually memorialized it. The fact is that it was kept and there were records kept. So I wanted to see those records. Then I had to bring all those things together. These are the initial stages to me getting into exactly what you referenced, the JFK stuff.
Right. So if you look at the guy nailed to a cross wearing a diaper, well, we refer to him as whatever. And also, you don't even have to study far, because if you believe in anything with the letter J, it's got to be less than 500 years old.
That's the problem. Yep.
So if you're with your own mouth, you profess that sound, you've washed away anything beyond 1500. Now, the second thing.
No, hold up real quick, because some people would say, look, I understand that is a, you know, mistranslation, and it's probably either this individual they called Issa or there's a guy named Yeshua, you know, and therefore this is who we're actually talking about. And somebody put a letter J on it for a reason.
Well, then if you're not objecting, according to legal precedent, it stands.
There you go.
Just like the leaders. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the first thing that we have would be even if you look at the King James Version, you have a continuation from Genesis all the way down. Right. So we understand there's a certain Judean law ethic. Right. Whether it's food, clothing, public, you know, legal, meaning criminal, everything. Right.
Absolutely. All, right, now, all of them accessible and something you can research easily for yourself. Go ahead.
Right. Then we also have, which I found out to my dismay, is not online anymore because the Catholic Church came in and said, this is the true translation of Pontius Pilate's letters. You know what that means, right? Mm. This is the false translation of Pontius Pilate's letters. And we look at Pontius Pilate, his history and what he wrote. And then we look at others, but make it in short. You look in what's called the biblical text, just to make it short. And I'll go over this again, Chuck. Well, give me 60 seconds on this. The Christ figure was brought to Pontius Pilate. He washes his hands publicly that he has nothing to do with the matter. And if you're not a moron, you know that the public hand washing comes from Judean law, from the ceremony of the heifer. Now, he also says twice or three or four times in two books that I am returning him back to you. You have a law. I am returning him back to you. Use your law. Use your law. I am making this exception. Now, what law the Judeans use, we know, is death by stoning because it was a death offense. What is the highest death offense crime in Judean law? Blasphemy. What was the Christ accused of? Blasphemy. So we know that the people passed from the third to the ninth hour, and we know that he was front and center on an almond tree. Why? Because there's about 20 hints that something important is going to happen on an almond tree throughout the entire book. Aaron's budding rod, the stripes pulled back by Jacob, the likeness of the almond tree on the seven branch lampstand in the tabernacle. I mean, the first chapter of Jeremiah, what do you see? Jeremiah see the branch of an almond tree. He says, yes, I shall do it. Do what? I mean, do you want me to keep going? This now is getting redundant over that topic, but I'm just giving these quick points to show how stupid people are by their own willfulness, right? So the other thing is, what happens to when someone hangs on a tree is a curse and to be burned? That's why Joseph of Arimathea ran in haste to claim the body and put it in his grave that he made for himself, and they rolled a big stone over it. And not only that, they had to have the Praetorian Guard guard it. Why? Because the Judean authority wanted to take the body and do what with it? You get it? Now, here's the whole point. If you read the scriptures, you'll find out that the prophets, you know, when I run into a Christian, I said, you believe in what? I said, well, I'll tell you who I believe in. I believe in the Christ that was prophesied by all the prophets mentioned in the Psalms and lived lawfully and was to be a prototype for the resurrection. And they're like, what? No, that's not the same word, man. You know, if you ask anyone, even the Pope himself, what was the purpose of the Christ, they don't know. The purpose of the biblical Christ was to be a prototype. Mm-hmm. He came in to do one thing. Remember when he walked around on earth and the woman came to him for something and he says, I didn't come for you. I came for the lost of Israel, right? You remember that verse? Well, it doesn't say the lost of Israel. It says those that have perished from Israel, because he came. Everyone wondered what happened after death, and there was a silent promise, meaning people didn't shout this over the streets, you know, where, you know, where's the promise of his resurrection? We want to see evidence of what happens after you die. So he came to show what happens after you die, period, not to start a religion. As a matter of fact, if you read in the Psalms and the book of Isaiah and other places, if he walked in the room right now with you and sat down and have a conversation with you for 3 hours and left, and someone asked you, what did he look like? You'd say, well, he looked like a man. I know, but what did he look like? I don't know, man. I can't really, don't remember any discernible features. He had the quality of invisibility. That's why when they wanted to push him over the cliff, how did he escape that? He just turned around and walked right through the crowd. How many people can do that? That's why. How many times did he encounter the Judean religious authorities, the Pharisees and the Sadducees by the Jordan and all that, where they really, you know, scathingly, he left them with just scathing feeling. He had encountered them at least 6 or 7 times. But when it came time to his arrest, they said, we don't know what he looks like. So would you please kiss him on the cheek to, do you see? No, Christians don't know this. But why? Because it's in the text. If you want to keep a secret, Chuck, print about a billion books and put them everywhere in the world, even motel dresser nightstands, and no one will find out what that secret is. So basically, he had the quality of invisibility. I was going to go into this. This is a spoiler, by the way. I was going to go into, because 90% of all the questions I get are biblical things. And by the way, the curse that the religious people live under is that they forbid anyone interpreting the text that they allege to subscribe to. If you start explaining any ancient writ to any follower of that religion, they get very offended because there is no way anyone can interpret it. Let me translate that. That means that the gods are acting in futility, right? They're going to give us communications we'll never comprehend, right? No, they don't work that way. So if you ever talk to anyone in any religious group and you start explaining the text to them, they get very offended. You can understand that, right?
How many times have you heard they throw you? They throw you out of their church is what they do,
or a synagogue or a mosque or anything. I was once in a going to park. You know, businesses in California at night, they turn their off Sunset Strip. They turn their parking lots. So they charge $10 to park the car there, right? Because all the tourists and stuff. I had a meeting in the area, so I go there and I noticed the guy's accent. You know, he's Palestinian. And I said, a very heavy accent, I said, where are you from? Are you Palestinian? He says, yeah, I am. And I said, how do you? I said, well, I know some people with similar accents. I was wondering, you know, you sound very similar. And he, all of a sudden, he started volunteering some bad stuff that Israel was doing in the news. And I told him what he was saying was unlawful according to the Quran. And he said, no. And I said, you know, I don't have to be in this meeting for 20 minutes. I happen to have a Quran right here in the car. I carry a Quran, a Bible, and a Book of Mormon, by the way. So if I'm ever having a conversation in public and someone says it's not in the Bible, I said, hold on a second. I happen to have a copy right here. It just drives them crazy sometimes, right? So anyway, I'm showing like four or five different places in the Quran that if you run into a Hebrew, a Jew, or a Judean, you're to help him back into the land. You're not to give him trouble or you're cursed, right? You're not to fight him. There's about four or five Syrias on that. Also, there's a Syria in the Quran that says that a true Muslim will acknowledge that the law was given to Moses and will do everything Moses said. Well, everything Moses said was in the first five books of the Bible. And if you go to Leviticus, it gives you all the feast days. Let's say the week of unleavened bread, the Passover, the Feast of Weeks, Tabernacle. How many Muslims do those? Because the Quran says they should. I mean, do you want me to go? I mean, how many? That's why when I say there is not a religion on the planet that does anything in the text is subscribed to is so rock solid and so insane of a statement that it can only be true. And it is true.
Oh, no. And you notice I've never argued with you on that point. It's absolutely there's no way to argue it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there is. There's that's the thing. Academics want arguments. I don't argue. What I do is I'll drop a truth bomb or a seed. And the thing is, when you drop a you see, you know what a peacemaker is? Someone that shows up with such overwhelming ordnance, the fight stops. If you go to a knife fight with a knife, you're going to ensue more violence. Now, it's three people fighting, not two. But if you go to a knife fight with a machine gun, everybody stops, right?
Yeah, see? I got you. Yeah.
That's what a peacemaker is. Actually, the old Colt whatever or Smith & Wesson, the big long-range accurate six-shooter was called a peacemaker because if someone knew you had that, there was no gunfight. So peacemaker, when in the Beatitudes in Scripture, when he says, blessed be the peacemakers, they shall get peace, that's not some hippie gypsy in the 60s with a peace sign. That's someone with incredible ordinance. That you like, if you read in the ancient books, I think it was with Kings, Phinehas of King David's group was considered the peacemaker. Why? Because he was a giant of a man with a sword that was about 3 feet long. And if David said, go get this guy, even if you ran into the inner parts of the temple, the priest stood away and said, he's right here. Go get him. That's a peacemaker. Oh, peacemaker would be like Andre the Giant with a sword that weighed, you know, like 3 feet long. You know, that's a peacemaker. You see what I mean?
No, anyway, absolutely.
I said, Andre the Giant. Now I'm, you know, but anyway.
It's
remember
okay.
Bruno Sammartino and all those guys? I mean, I remember back in the days watching it when it had some with McMahon brothers and all that stuff. I mean, that's when there was more showmanship without the bad taste, I guess. But anyway.
Oh, there you go. And they wouldn't have had Trump there at all. You know, King Kong Moskal, I can't imagine facing, you know, facing the guys of today. There were a lot of fat guys that were wrestlers back then, but they were still strong as hell.
George the Animal Steel, right?
Right, exactly. Anyway, you know, there was a serious question that was posed earlier in the chat room, and it did link to something you had to say. And with the last few minutes, I'd like to address it. But first, I'm gonna interject something personal again. A lot of times, I get criticized, like you know, the Greek is sitting there saying things that you should be offended by, and people often wonder why I'm not offended. You know, there's good reason for that. I take what he is saying quite objectively most of the time. I register things that I think the listener might register is what I'm doing. And I'm trying to conduct a discussion here. So I don't get personally offended. I am, in fact, somebody who has tattoos on my body. And of course, this question is about tattoos. Here we go. You know, what about that? Basically that, you know, you've mentioned it several times. But never really elaborated on.
I started in 2003 before the craze started. In 2003, if you saw someone with a tattoo, it might have been military, somebody, a biker, right? By 2005, you saw 70-year-old grandmas getting them. And now I can't go in public without seeing about maybe 10 or 20% of the population. And I wrote about this 14 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, and I started getting tattooed.
How did I know?
I started getting tattooed in the 90s there. And certainly I was one of those people who was loosely connected to like biker culture and this right, kind of me, thing. So therefore, that's where it came from.
This is not my this has nothing to do with my perspective on it. This is my disclosure on how you're being set up by the gods. It's a setup.
Okay.
By the gods. You're being set up by the gods. because if biblical law, what's called Mosaic law, is instilled on the whole world, the law states that if you those that have these things like marking on the skin are not allowed within your society. Now, if you're talking on a national level, they would probably take you to the border, wouldn't they? Right?
Okay.
But on a worldwide level, they're probably going to take you to the Hilton Hotel on the moon that you were promised in the 1930s World Fair that should have been built by 1998, right? And it wasn't. No. Right? Where's the border if the whole world, including the Antarctica, North Pole, is under this rule? Where is it? Where's the
death.
Border?
It's death, exactly. Basically.
Yeah. And who's going to be doing it? There's going to be no tattoo police. You're going to be in such a fervor that little Johnny is going to be doing it. You know, mom is going to be doing it. You know, your coworker is going to be doing it. What kind of a fervor? Do you remember the fervor that happened on the 12th of September 2001? If you were wearing any kind of hijab or turban or headdress that resembled, like if you were even Sufi or Pakistan, whatever, do you know I remember even in Arizona, three or four people being killed on September 12th, 2001 for appearing Muslim.
Oh, yeah, no. Listen, I worked at a gas station. I told you that story about having to protect guys that even vaguely resembled what they thought were those that allegedly attacked us. And right. there were people like basically threatening them, trying to run them over, all kinds of stuff. And I physically had to intervene.
And that was the effect of a deep underground nuclear detonation. Could you imagine the effect of a cosmic sort? That drives people into believing with a new leadership that you have a 1,000-year reign of peace and happiness as you're experiencing right now. But we have glitches in our society, and in order to fix those glitches, we need to adhere to this law a little more stringently and these laws a little more stringently. By the way, let's go use a tattoo as a side note. If you know anyone that's heavily invested in the pork business or the shrimp business or the shellfish business or the rabbit rabbit stew, like Bugs Bunny, you know, what are you making? Rabbit stew, you know. Get out of those futures at this point. I mean, they're still doing well, right? Yeah, they're doing well. Yeah, Anyway.
No, I totally
mixed fibers, you know, mixed fibers, all these things. So this is, I mean, this sounds just as crazy as even I think you supported the idea in 1995 talking about a 15-year war in Afghanistan. Let's say that would never happen, right? But or whatever, you see. Absolutely. So how many times have you heard me say Greek speak is not for this society, number one. Number two, maybe it's not time yet. And number three, how about taking the information and filing it away for a little bit later? Because time passes really fast, folks.
Well, that's certainly what I'm doing with a lot of it is filing it away, because quite often we do see those that there are not often, as though there's a great prolific amount of them. But occasionally you'll find people that are sounding the, you know, the future.
Well, not really. Yeah, but
way ahead of their time. I mean, yeah. Look, if you think about George Orwell. Right. And, you know, how people talk about that. And you know, this is one of the most common practices in independent media and all that is to reference Brave New World or 1984 or both. The fact is that a lot of that, which was thought to be science fiction and a seemingly dystopic view of the future, was entirely accurate. We do have the surveillance state. Well, no, to a certain point, I'm not saying
Let me interject. This is important for that interject, because when after Orwell, even 20 or 30 years later, it still seemed feasible. Just like, for example, when they told you you're going to have flying cars by the 90s and the 70s, it still was feasible, you know, or a hotel on the moon by the year 2000, 20 years after the 1930s World Fair, you know, when they told everyone you'll be on the moon 2000 and all that, right? It still seemed feasible. What's going to happen in the future, that George Orwell stuff's going to be pushed to the side. But what George Orwell being purely secular is true, because if you look at the ancient writs, if the gods do not come and mop it up, if they wait another generation, there will be no life left. And when you look at the no life being left, it qualifies bees, tigers, whales, bacteria, everything. It's a very serious thing. And I've also explained in private how it's possible to do that, but not using chemicals and guns and nukes, by using bioacoustics, radionics, and biogeometry. You know, you can do that from, you know, your couch. You don't need guns and all that stuff. This is the level of technology that's been around for the 20th century. I mean, look at Tesla. You know, he says I could put a protection over a city where it would be impervious, as well as make a death ray. And this was what, 1908?
Right. Disintegration is not science fiction. It's something that can be done either slowly or quickly, depending on how finely tuned your instruments are.
Oh, yeah. The free energy is here. There was a display at Idaho recently, a few months ago. The machines, the equipment to do that, just actually using how magnetism works. Your Star Trek technology, you know, where the tricorder, you know, you could heal someone's bone there using certain waves is here. You know, but you're not going to get it because it's just the way you're acting. You know, I mean, it exists. There are people that will witness to it, and you should pursue it enough. You can achieve it. I mean, like I said, I could go into any ICU and have people go home the next day. ICU, not regular hospital room. And I'm just an idiot, you know, basic surface dwelling, earth inhabitant idiot. Right. So.
There you go. Well, anyway, listen, you know, we are down to the last couple of minutes here. And of course, somebody's asking about the glitches, which I think might take longer than the 2 minutes I might be able to allow
glitches,
for you.
The glitches. Yeah. The glitches start around 2027, 2028, around there. And then, no, the midpoint of 2028, 2029 is when the glitches start to take place. That's because the people that are going to be leadership are going to be imbued and endowed with what's called supernatural powers. And I have a whole list of those, but they have to be interpreted out of the text that you have. But the text that you have is very, very inaccurate. But if you look at it close enough, you might get some accuracy. So I don't know, if just a minute or two to close off, I guess. Just say this is a public service announcement. And the only other way to elaborate this piece, this time when the glitches come around, is, you know, cows that are free range and all of a sudden they corral them in and now they're eating all this corn and they're like, wow, we don't have to go out and eat cactus and dry weeds anymore. Look at, they're so kind to us, feeding us all this corn. Well, you know what's next, right? It's called a feedlot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the gods are setting you up. And here's the thing, the setup, you shouldn't be ashamed of it because it's the gods that are setting you up. So how are you going to go against beings with a IQ of 2 billion? Think about it. I say 2 million, but maybe you got to jack it up. So don't feel, if you're set up by a human, you kind of, you know, shame on me the first time, shame on you the second, right? But this is the gods setting people up. So sorry, folks. Hate to be the one to bring you, wouldn't say the news, but the info.
Well, I always go with it is what it is. And quite honestly, you know, when people say, well, aren't you, gee, do you, if you believe everything the Greek says, then you're in a pretty bad spot. I think I'm not going to be here. And even if I am, I'm part of the equation. So, you know, I realize that none of this is going to be pretty at some point, although for a little while it'll be nice, won't it, Greek?
Oh, yeah, you got a lot to look forward to. And if I had to just say one thing accurately about the next 12 years is peace and harmony and growth of society and things like that is what you see coming. Absolutely, without a doubt, that will come.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that one for sure. Now, this is the second time you've joined me recently, and I do appreciate it when you do. Who knows when the next event might be where you and I get together, but want to thank you and also thank the people that went over to Uncommon Radio and heeded your message over there. Do appreciate the contributions. I acknowledge them and tell you guys that it's very much useful and very much appreciated from my end, and I'm extremely grateful to you for having done that, and also, you know, just for coming on and, you know, giving us all a proper kick in the head, because it's required. Listen, occasionally a beating is useful, my friend. You can learn a lot of lessons, and a great many of the things that we've decided to marry ourselves to when it comes to this alleged reality, this alleged structure, you know, after a while, the only solution is to kind of give them a good kick. So
I like calling it the full mental range of motion, and you know, like full motion and moving the body fully extended, and also it is dummy load free. So, and that's with that, thanks for having me. And again, if anyone visits the Uncommon Radio site, there's not much there. It's a courtesy site, but you will see a banner to donate to Chuck for this interim. He can use it. And everyone who has, thank you very much for heeding that request. And with that said, thanks for having me, Chuck.
No, absolutely. And always a pleasure, because like I said, it just sometimes you need to find the very rare individual who is saying something that no one else is saying. And you can't complain to me that the Greek is not saying things that no one else is saying. So there you go. That's the end of the show for tonight, the end of the week. Greek, I don't know how you want to give a parting shot on your way out the door, but I welcome you to do so.
Oh, that'll be it. Just thanks, and we'll see you again, maybe.
There you go. And I do appreciate all of you who have tuned in, everybody who stuck with me. Of course, my producer, Tony Hurst. Next week, it's going to get interesting as well. I won't announce anything here tonight, but stick around, stay tuned, take a look at what it is that I'm doing. Doing my best to continue on with this. Remember, I'm just Ocelli. You are the effect. Anyway, have a good weekend, everybody.